Friends Life Care, a subsidiary of Friends Life Care Partners, supports WHYY. Friends Life Care is a member organization designed for people who want to remain independent in their own home. Membership helps protect savings and prepare for unexpected changes in health. A plan is in place if care is ever needed. A nonprofit, Quaker-based organization since 1985, Friends Life Care offers educational seminars throughout the region. Details at friendslifecare.org.
If you're thinking of renting out your home during Pope Francis's visit to Philadelphia this fall, perhaps you should reconsider. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Starting us off this evening, WHYY's Katie Colinero reports that, so far, those hoping to skip town and cash in are finding the market a tad cooler than expected.
When Pope Francis comes to Philadelphia the last weekend in September, the city could welcome as many as 2 million people, and that Holy See will need a place to crash. So, like a lot of people from the Jersey Shore to Delaware, Mark Zajac is listing his home in Philadelphia for rent on the sites Craigslist and Airbnb.
So, here's the room that...
He gives me a tour of his three-bedroom row house in Fairmount, just a 10-minute walk to the Benjamin Franklin Parkway, where Pope Francis is expected to make two public appearances, including a huge outdoor mass.
This is the third floor.
Zajac shows me the large master bedroom and bathroom, and the pièce de résistance... a roof deck.
You can actually see the top of the art museum over there, and I believe that is where the Pope is going to be delivering his mass.
How much for this view? Zajac and his wife Kim started out asking for $16,000 for the entire week, but no takers.
So far, we have not gotten any feedback, no.
They're not the only ones. Judy Baylor, who has a background in real estate, listed her house in Point Breeze last week, and...
No, I just listed the property a few days ago, and we haven't had any inquiries so far.
David Simpson, who until recently lived in Los Angeles, listed his parents' house in Moorestown, New Jersey on Airbnb back in March. He also hasn't gotten any inquiries, although the listing is getting a lot of eyeballs.
I have my listing up in Los Angeles, which I rent relatively frequently, and I don't get as many views on this property that I have here as we do on the New Jersey one.
It's a pretty safe bet those page views are not just from reporters poking around, but has the papal housing bubble burst? Let's look back at another event that brought throngs of people to an American city.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear.
1.8 million people traveled to Washington, D.C. to see President Obama's first inauguration in 2008. Much like Philadelphia, hotel rooms in the D.C. area filled up quickly, and thousands of people put up entire homes, apartments, and guest rooms for rent on sites like Craigslist. Media reports generated a lot of buzz about the high rates some were charging, which enticed even more people into the short-term rental market, hoping to make some extra cash. But by the time Inauguration Day rolled around, people like Tanya Odabashian couldn't give their rentals away.
I feel like initially we had an influx of calls that basically went nowhere, and then radio silence.
Odabashian's company specializes in short-term apartments for business clients. For the inauguration, she set aside 20 studios and one bedrooms in D.C.'s Foggy Bottom neighborhood and charged about $300 a night, far less than what others were asking for. 6 years later, it still bugs Odabashian that she wasn't able to rent those apartments.
Given that the media kept, you know, going on and on and on about how impossible it was going to be to get a hotel room and how people were going to have to park, you know, 2 hours away. I think those that might have come and been happy to pay $300 a night for an apartment were thinking, holy crap, there's no way I'm going to get a room, and didn't even try, maybe? I don't know.
In the end, the supply was much bigger than the demand, and that was before Airbnb existed. Homeowners in Philadelphia are still optimistic. After all, there are more than 2 months left until Pope Francis arrives. Brent Rovner created the site PopeDelphia.com back in January as an online marketplace just for papal rentals. Rovner has his own apartment right on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway listed on the site, and he's banking on a last-minute rush in August and September.
There's not many hotels down here. So I believe once people figure that out and they call like I did, how much is a hotel room? $3,000. Okay, what's the next option?
He's asking $10,000 for the whole week and is hesitant to budge on the price. But people like Rovner aren't the only ones looking to cash in on the papal visit. Philadelphia City Council legalized short-term home rentals, and starting this week, will tax them like hotel rooms. Councilman Bill Greenlee deliberately pushed the bill ahead of Pope Francis's arrival when rates could be highest. Back at the Zajax Row House in Fairmount, the couple recently dropped their listing price to $14,000. Kim Zajac is getting discouraged.
I actually am disappointed. Yeah, we haven't had anyone reply yet, so hopefully soon. I really want to go on vacation for a week.
She says a couple months ago, an acquaintance of hers was able to rent her house in South Philly for $20,000. We emailed her friend to see if that was true. She wrote back saying no, she hadn't even listed her home. Not sure if there's a lot of demand, she said. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Avian flu has not made it to Pennsylvania, but that doesn't mean the virus is going completely unnoticed. Facing a nationwide egg shortage, Rita's Water Ice has temporarily discontinued its custard, as WHYY's Jessica McDonald reports.
Outside the Rita's at Spruce and 15th Streets, a sign alerts customers that the shop is selling soft-serve ice cream instead of its classic custard. Owner Ron Kaufman says fat from egg yolks gives the custard more body, which might be news to some.
Most customers seem uninformed that there was previously egg inside of their ice cream.
So can anyone tell the difference? At the South Street East location in Center City, Carrie Smith takes a bite of her cherry and chocolate ice cream gelati.
Honestly, now it tastes really good and really creamy still.
13-year-old Connell says it tastes better.
More flavor blast.
Other local ice creameries won't feel the impact of the egg shortage. Bassett's uses egg in just one flavor, French vanilla, and Little Baby's Ice Cream and Franklin Fountain both specialize in Philadelphia-style ice cream, which specifically lacks eggs. I'm Jessica McDonald, WHYY News.
This weekend, Philadelphia's Modern Ballet Company, Ballet X, will premiere a new dance choreographed to the music of a local musician, singer-songwriter Chris Casper. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that Casper and his band will perform live on stage with the dancers.
In 2013, Philadelphia songwriter Chris Casper released Bag of Bones. It's a CD of 10 songs he wrote, arranged, and produced himself. Formerly a member of the bluegrass band The Lowlands, it's Casper's fourth solo release. After a year of touring to support the record, he got a call from the modern dance company, Ballet X. It not only wanted to create a ballet of his music, it wanted him to perform live on stage. Casper says he jumped at the chance to share a stage with a ballet troupe.
Actually, I feel a nice weight off my shoulders that finally not all eyes are looking at me. You know, it feels great. It lets me let loose a little more. You can get nervous. The power of a couple hundred eyes looking at you is pretty intense.
This is not typical dance music, but Casper says he wrote the songs with a lot of space so anyone, listeners or dancers, could crawl inside.
When I was tracking this record, I was very conscious of leaving space. I didn't want a lot of cymbals, and I didn't want things ringing into where we could have some quiet, like a breath. That doesn't happen in music a lot these days.
The dance for this music was created by choreographer Adam Hoagland, who's based in England.
His writing is very poetic. I think he has a romantic sensibility, and I think I'm really a romantic at heart.
Hoagland was commissioned by Ballet X to create an original work in Philadelphia, so he wanted to work with a local musician. The dance does not act out Casper's lyrics. Instead, he takes inspiration purely from the music.
What I like about his work is it has a spareness to it, pared down, very clean, stripped back. There's a room for a third voice, if you will, which is the dance.
This piece by Casper's band and Hoagland's dancers is one of a trio of dances. The other two on the program are also by Hoagland, set to pre-recorded music. One is a dark, brooding piece, the other a lively comic piece. Hoagland says this number is like a relaxed breath of summer air. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Pennsylvania's Attorney General says Governor Tom Wolf's death penalty moratorium is blatantly unconstitutional and wants the state Supreme Court to clear the way for the state's first execution since 1999. Attorney General Kathleen Kane filed a request Monday for relief in the case of Hubert Lester Michael on death row for killing Trista Ng in York County nearly 22 years ago. The filing attacks Wolf's policy of issuing a series of reprieves in death row cases, at least until he can review the findings of an overdue study of capital punishment. Members of the largest union representing many editorial, advertising, and circulation workers of the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Daily News have ratified a new 2-year deal with Philadelphia Media Network. The deal calls for no increase in health care costs and an end to unpaid furloughs, though it does allow management to exempt up to 1/4 of any group of employees from seniority-based layoffs. Philly.com members of the same union voted this evening. Or rather, will vote this evening. 84 degrees, partly cloudy skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks tonight on WHYY. Remaining cloudy overnight, falling back to 73 degrees. Still ahead, what would you do if your father pointed out a video to you and told you not to watch it?
As I put in the VCR, I do have a moment, even at 11 years old, when I realize there are things in this world that cannot be unseen.
Newsworks tonight takes a closer look on WHYY.
Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's CARON.org.
Next time on The Pulse.
Hello.
So you think you're perfectly healthy?
Things are fine. I eat well and I exercise a lot.
But after filling out a workplace health survey, you get signed up for mandatory telephone coaching to improve your habits.
My total is high because my HDL is high. Don't you understand? That's why it's high.
A look at workplace wellness on The Pulse, Friday morning at 9 on WHYY.
What else do you need to know?
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller.
When is your debt to society paid off? Why can't I borrow SBA money? What did I do that was so? I went to jail. I broke the law. I'm not saying when you come back, open up the gates of heaven to me again. But, I mean, there should be some type of standard that if you're clean for 10 years, you get the right to vote.
That's South Philadelphia businessman and convicted felon Angelo Lutz. Newsworks' Brian Hickey caught up with him and joins us now with more on Lutz's dream to become a culinary star. But first, Brian, take us back to 2001.
Well, 2001, Angelo was one of seven defendants in a mob trial at the federal courthouse at 6th and Market, where the most famous name of that group is Joey Merlino, obviously. But Angelo made a name for himself by being the only free defendant at the time. He would walk out of the courthouse every day and basically give the news cameras a debriefing on what had happened inside the courthouse.
He was put away for, what, some 7 years?
84 months, yeah.
Was it working in the prison kitchen that he developed a love for the culinary arts?
It sure seems that way. He was the mob chef beforehand, but then when he was incarcerated, he found his way to the kitchen and was cooking for all of his friends, I believe he said every Sunday night. After his release, he had the idea of, hey, why don't I open a restaurant? And he found a location in Collingswood, New Jersey, right across the bridge, and went with the Kitchen Consigliere Cafe, which is, I guess the best way to describe it is mob-themed. And he's looking to expand now, but finds himself challenged in doing so.
Well, he knew good food. He also knows good people, or at least people who think he's pretty good, including his business partner and a fairly famous writer, formerly with the Inquirer.
Yeah, George Anastasia. And what George told me was he'd never seen any ex con mobster be able to thrive when they got released. Mostly they tend to find their way back into the racket. But with Angelo wanted to stay on the straight and narrow, and he has remained committed to his restaurant. Because of his past, he finds himself hemmed in where Collingswood is a dry town, and as an ex-felon, he can't get liquor license, and he can't get loans from the Small Business Administration.
Let's listen to George Anastasia. This is almost a character reference for Mr. Lutz.
Nobody has done what he's done. You have to have that will, that drive to do it. But most don't want to be bothered. Some of them want to go back and be what they were, because that's what their identity is. Angelo's got more going for him than that. He doesn't need to be a gangster.
And Anastasia should know something about gangsters. His book, The Last Gangster, was a New York Times bestseller chronicling the demise of the Philadelphia mob.
Yeah, and he is the preeminent voice covering the mob in Philadelphia. He's been at it for a while now. And what George told me was, if Angelo needed money, instead of relying on old friends with unsavory pasts for money, he went the crowdfunding route.
So what does Angelo next want to do that's both moral and perhaps legal?
Well, he wants to expand and open new locations, and he wants to be a culinary TV star, basically. And he's been on QVC, he has friends at the Food Network that are trying to get him a show there. But he also has this pending deal where he could theoretically open a kitchen consigliere location in a Pennsylvania casino.
Ah, the law has something to say about that, though.
Oh, they sure do, because Angelo Lutz is not allowed in a Pennsylvania casino because he's on the exclusion list for 3 years.
Now, he put himself on that list, is that right?
He did, and the way he explained that to me was, if he was put on the exclusion list without his sign-off, it could have been a permanent thing. So he signed up for a 3-year exclusion. He'll be on that 3-year exclusion list until next year. And then he can appeal that decision, and hopefully, from his perspective, he'll be taken off that list, and then maybe if this deal is still pending, he'll be able to open that location in a casino.
There are any number of restaurants and sites. Why is this one so critical in terms of his plans to become ultimately that culinary star?
It's not that the casino location is the only place he can expand, but the problem becomes Collingswood is a dry town, so he can have that location there because it's a BYOB town, and he doesn't need a liquor license. So could he expand into any dry town in New Jersey or Pennsylvania or wherever? Sure. But
a lot of restaurants' profits are predicated on those potent potable sales.
And that's the thing. He's losing a lot of money because he's not allowed to sell liquor. And by not having a lot of money, he can't really buy buildings to open new restaurants.
Thanks, Brian.
No problem, Dave.
NewsWorks blogger Brian Hickey on NewsWorks Tonight. When someone points out a video to you and says, don't watch, what else can you do but watch? On this episode of Story Corner, David Crabb recalls just such an incident when he was 11 years old.
When I was young, when I was a little closeted gay 14-year-old in San Antonio, Texas, my dad really supported all of my interests that I had. Whenever I wanted to do something new, my dad was always there with a credit card, like, how much money does the saxophone cost? You know, just like ready to help me out. Now, at this point, I guess I was about 13 years old, and I had a new interest. Do you guys remember the show Silver Spoons with Ricky Schroeder? Yeah? I love that show, and I thought, you know, I could make a show like that. And for my birthday, I want a video camera. And my dad took out the credit card, and he bought me, because video cameras then were like $8,000, and they were like the size of an industrial toaster. And he bought me this video camera, and I was so excited. I was going to make this very complex science fiction movie. I tried to film this thing all day, and then I came home, and I was so pissed, and I threw the camera in the back of the closet. I tell my dad, I'm like, Dad, I really didn't like the video camera. I'm really sorry. And he's pissed off, because this is just another thing that I was going to do that I've now just sort of forgotten about and moved on. Now, my dad at that time worked on the road. He lived out of a Winnebago as a fiber optic technician, and he would drive all around down south, and I would see him like 1 week out of every month. He had been traveling through Georgia, and he met this woman named Young, and Young was a Korean lady, and to me, this was the most exotic and exciting thing that had ever happened to me in my life. The idea that I could have a stepmom who is a real-life Asian lady was amazing to me. My dad came home for a trip, and he said, you know what, son? You're not using that camera. If you can give me that video camera, I'm going to take it on the road. I'm going to take a vacation with Young, and I can film it. And even though she lives far away, you never met her, I can come back, and we can watch the tape. You can kind of get to know her that way. And I was like, that's awesome. Do it. And my dad went on the trip. He came back. He gave me back the camera. We had dinner together. After a few days, it was time for him to hit the road. And later that night, he calls me. And he says, hi, DJ. I did the damnedest thing. I left a video
in that video camera I returned to you? And I would really appreciate it, son, if you don't watch it. I can't even imagine what my dad is trying to keep from me. Finally, I get off the phone. I take out the video. I do have a moment, even at 11 years old, when I realize there are things in this world that cannot be unseen. And nonetheless, I reach out and push play. We open on a hotel room. And then my dad strolls out. He is wearing a 10 gallon cowboy hat and a pearl button cowboy shirt, tight Wrangler jeans and cowboy boots. And then with more vim and vigor than I've ever seen him do anything, he proceeds to belt out this song. Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. How you doing, pretty little thing? Good to see you here. My dad sings this song like he's in the main stage of the rodeo. And then, slowly as the song ends, he does a little pose for the camera. And then he runs forward and he turns off the video camera. A few days later, I returned the video and it was like a weird drug deal. Like, hey, just going to how you? It was like that. And we did not discuss it. Now, many years have gone by and this funny thing has happened. My dad found this thing called SingSnap. SingSnap is an online social website, but it's all based around karaoke. My dad started this account. He's recorded 350 songs. And it's a very strange experience now when I go to SingSnap and I can log on to my dad's account and I can see him sitting there with his little bald head and he sings these songs that finally, for once in my life, these are videos that I'm supposed to see. Thank you.
That's New York-based writer, performer, and storyteller David Crabb on this episode of Story Corner. He was recorded at the 2014 First Person Art Festival's Story League Sings event. You can read an interview with David and listen to other stories at newsworks.org. Finally this evening, turns out Americans really don't like New Jersey, but they love Pennsylvania, at least according to recent poll numbers. New Jersey is the only state in the nation which Americans tend to view negatively. That's according to the YouGov survey. According to the poll, the image of New Jersey often falls somewhere between the MTV show Jersey Shore, HBO's The Sopranos, and the chemical plants and gray industrial landscape that inspired much of Bruce Springsteen's work. And we hate to rub it in, New Jersey, but Pennsylvania tied with Florida as the most popular large states, followed by Texas and New York. Though it's tough for the Poconos or Valley Forge to compete with the tropical foliage and waterfalls of the Aloha State, and overall, Hawaii is the most popular state in the country. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Thomas Jefferson University Hospital supports WHYY. The Kimmel Cancer Center at Jefferson is a National Cancer Institute designated center whose physicians and scientists seek to transform scientific discoveries into more precise diagnosis and individualized treatments to improve outcomes and quality of life for patients with cancer. To schedule an appointment or for more information, 1-800-JEFF-NOW or jefferson.edu. Thomas Jefferson University Hospital.